I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going strong for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, we all arrange ourselves in front of our radios with the intention to advise, inform, learn, and be entertained. And I am glad that you have all returned tonight, where we will try to do that all over again. Let me drop for a second, after which I will return with the usual link. If you would like to contact me using email, that would be for what we call mailbag questions. That would be questions that people would regularly ask here on the technical net, but you may not be able to reach our repeaters. If you email me your question, we may discuss it here on the Limark TechNet. You can listen to it when it is live streamed over the internet or listen later to the readily available TechNet archive. Another reason to email me is to suggest a topic for discussion. You may have some expertise in some technology that is in the news and want to share your insights. You may wish to just be a part of a discussion, or you might not know too much about a topic but would be interested in hearing others discuss it. You might also use my email to suggest the TechNet puzzle, which we are always searching for. Something to provoke a conversation and remind ourselves of things we once knew that might have faded over time. Preferably something that can't be Googled, or even better, the Google answer is wrong. Another reason would be if you want Paul WS2N to comment on something space or NASA related. You can contact Paul directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag.ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a second, after which I will continue with the usual links. As always, I have collected all kinds of interesting YouTubes and articles and posted them on my link. Just type roy.ac2gs.com and you will see my links, which will be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have a chat room available to our... Some nights are hectic, while other nights are quiet. You can reach it by typing chat.ac2gs.com into your browser. We offer an internet stream of this technical net and the Glen Oaks repeater. Just type in technet.ac2gs.com. It is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I always like to remind everyone that Mike Case has archives of these radio.tv that go as far back as September 2006. He has had over 1 million visitors, make it 1,000,001. Within these archives is the wisdom of many hams that have moved far away from us or passed away and are now silent keys. Let me drop again before I tell you what to expect tonight. Tonight, we have our usual schedule plan. We will be asking for technical questions, preferably amateur radio-based, followed by any questions or comments related to any subject in science and technology. That should take us to 10:15. Paul WS2N will then begin his SpaceNet report, which should take us to 11 o'clock, when I will return to put a bow on tonight's technical net and wish you a great week. That's the plan should the laws of physics, the repeater, my radio, and my computer continue to operate, not to mention my power supply. Oh, yeah. One other thing you may like to discuss, no living being is saying any of these words right now, and this is not a recording that I made earlier of my voice. No human vocal cords have been used during this entire introduction to tonight's technical net. This has been a demonstration of one of the latest AI text-to-voice synthesis algorithms. This has all been computer-generated for your edification. Just another demonstration of what artificial intelligence is already capable of. Just think what this technology might grow capable of doing in the future. We may all grow superfluous in the shadow of our future beautiful, terrifying creations. Any thoughts?
So, any thoughts, anyone?
WS2N.
Yes, Wes recognized, Paul recognized. Wes was first, so Wes, what would you like to say?
I
go first, Wes.
I recognize that there is something wrong with your voice. The pitch or the timbre, if I could use some words, was similar, but that was not you. That's my few cents. So that was AI. Enter here.
Okay. Paul, you wanted to say something?
I would have bet on it. You know, when you give the calls, you know, AC2GS, AC2GS, it was coming out too distinct, each letter, or even with my call. And a couple of the words, you would normally be closer, you know, for the next word. You could see some of the words, an abnormal separation to the words. And very close. Good. Would have said, well, here's a guy starting. Back to you.
DDH with a comment.
Yes, John?
I think Wesley hit it right on the head, and he used just the word I was going to say, timbre. There's something about the pitch or the timing or the voice overtone that just didn't sound right. You had the tonality was correct, but there was something just a little bit off about it. That made me wonder, maybe because it was a little too precise. Go ahead.
KE2AOB.
Well, yes?
This is Ivan, KE2AOB. Well, everybody, I would think, that would agree that if they were to point out what voice is this, they would recognize your voice, and I would too. So it's just a matter of short time where it's going to become indistinguishable. But my thought is that first when technology came into play, like in the early 20th century with video and audio, it could be used as sort of a vindication or evidence of some sort of things, like witness evidence. Look at this video and, you know, listen to this audio recording. It could be used as a proof of something. But now, paradoxically, with the better technology, we've gotten to the point we can't trust it anymore. What we see, what we hear, it's kind of a weird situation. Over.
Yes, Wes recognized. I just want to respond to Ivan. Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the beast. There was a Michael Crichton book, I think it was called Red Sun, where some Japanese firm basically faked reality. They did this was back, I think, 1980 or so, but they predicted the ability to kind of change video imagery and produce false artifacts that some people would take seriously. This is only going to get worse, guys. It's not going to get better. The pauses are a little bit off. The intonation occasionally is a little bit off, but it's very, very close, and it's only going to get closer as time goes on. So you're not going to be able to believe what you see or you hear anymore. You know, brave new world and all that. Wes, you wanted to say something.
The verification is very easy. If I was to ask that voice, how do I call Roy? I usually call Dr. Roy. That voice wouldn't be able to answer. So it's like if we're looking to the monologue or we're looking to recording data, that mimic-like voice is going to sound more and more precise. But it's not going to interact the same way. So I don't believe we're going to ever make a mistake. And I have a question to Paul. Because I don't know where to mention Paul tonight. You've got my email about X34A and X37B. It was classified project. Did you have a chance to view it?
Are you asking me or are you asking Paul? I forward the information to Paul.
Yeah, that was question to Paul.
I hear you, Watson. Oh, yeah, I read the whole thing. Very good. Very, very
okay.
Good. Yeah, I got it. And yeah, Roy, he sent it to me as well, so I got your information as well, Roy. But yeah, very good. We'll talk about that later, Wes. Back to you, Roy.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. For those interested, if you want to know exactly what it sounds like without the, I'm going through All-Star, and then there's the repeater, so if you want to hear what the original audio sounded like, I posted it to my link page, you know, roy.ac2gs.com. At the very top is an audio file. You can play it at your leisure if you're curious. But I just wanted to share that with you, and getting back to Wes's comment, this portion that I demonstrated is purely a synthesized text-to-speech. I typed in the monologue, and it provided the audio. It is possible to tie it together with something like ChatGPT, so that theoretically, and I think OpenAI also offers access to a speech-to-text translator as well. So if the radio signals were very good and their API is able to understand people, theoretically you could have ChatGPT either speaking with another voice that I picked that would be synthetic, or my own, or I could clone someone else's. Of course, it would only be what ChatGPT knew, so ChatGPT wouldn't know what you call me. So that's true. But again, think of these things not as the end point, but at the beginning, because it's gonna continue, and it'll be rather interesting, if not a little scary, to see where this all goes. The bottom line, unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, is you're going to learn that you can't necessarily trust your eyes or your ears, and so that leads to a curious future for all of us.
AD2VHD.
Yes, Jim.
Interesting demonstration. I knew immediately something was up, but I could not put any finger on what it possibly could be. I will say that your voice continues to sound unusual with the link you're using. But can I suggest a thought to carry through this conversation? As we find it harder and harder to evaluate the messenger, we should more important to evaluate the message for it to stand on its own merits or not. Those are my thoughts. KD2VHD, thank you.
Okay, Jim. I mean, that's a good thing to interject. You know, the content is the most important, but you know, who presents it, and then figuring out why they presented it. Unfortunately, also can color the information that's given to you. If your best friend provides you with information, you're most likely going to accept it, at least in that they believe it. Whereas if your worst enemy in the world plants some kind of seed in your head about suspicions and you don't know it's an enemy, you may take it as advice. So, again, I agree with you in principle, but ultimately we always kind of wrap whatever we hear around the person telling it to us, whether we know them or don't know them, makes a difference in how we perceive the information that they transmit to us.
No argument at all. Just as the ratio of the believability changes, our perception and our evaluation of that information needs to change accordingly. Interesting stuff. Very, very interesting.
DDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
I can see as this progresses, that there could be the creation, this is just a random thought I had, the creation of some kind of audio watermark. Just like, for example, a lot of the bills nowadays, if you attempt to just run them through a regular copy machine, the very fine lines and gratings on there will generate, I think, what's called a blob pattern, or a kind of visible optical interference pattern. And right away, you know that it's been duplicated. There may be some kind of like audio watermark that can be added on to right away know that that somebody is generating or somebody is attempting to use AI to generate your voice or something like that. Just a thought. I think as this AI gets more advanced, the very nature of it will probably point out some kind of watermark like that. Just a thought.
Well, it's a very good thought. Matter of fact, the people that designed this algorithm that I use tonight are called 11 Labs, and they have inserted watermarks into the audio so that if you took the recording, you know, if you recorded it off your radio, you went to their website and went to a page that is able to detect their work, it would come across as a synthetic voice because it is watermarked. Also, they also have some other methods of not really playing very foul with this technology. In order to provide this close a clone of my voice, I had to approve it by reading random phrases which you would never find recorded anywhere. So you have to talk into a microphone. I think I had to talk five different times before it finally said that I was me and approved the cloning. So there are, you know, there are people kind of aware of the legal battles in the future. They don't want people to be able to clone any other person's voice just with a tape of their voice. I needed to collect 3 hours of my own audio voice to train it this well. There are other technologies that don't train it quite as well as this particular clone that you heard. So there are watermarks in that audio output that I sent out. There are audio watermarks.
BZ?
Yes, Rich?
You sounded like you had a cold, but other than that, it was pretty right on. I read an article a few days ago how kids are using ChatGPT to write their college essays. And it didn't say it in the article, but it sort of said that the colleges don't know what to do about it. They don't have a clue how to spot it. And because I guess these kids are getting ideas generated and then putting it into their own words. So it's a problem for colleges.
Unfortunately, I think it's the opposite. I think they just inject a couple of premises, and the ChatGPT generates the form of a college essay. And unfortunately, yes, there is no watermark at present for the text output. I don't know how you do a watermark on a text output. So there's no particular way yet, but people have been trying. They've been setting up AI systems to try and detect other AI systems. And surprisingly, it's very difficult to do that so far, although you never know what will happen in the future. I mean, I've chatted with ChatGPT for, I don't know, a week or two, and by the end of the week or two, I think I can recognize it. It has its own little peculiarities. But to model that onto yet another artificial intelligence is probably a little bit more difficult than the tricks they've already done. So, yeah, I've heard that that's a major problem, and eventually when people figure out a way to figure it out, there's going to be a lot of kids in trouble getting thrown out of college if they did that. And I'm sure a good 10, 50, 20% did that, because that's what kids do, unfortunately.
Yeah. like I did for a screenplay I was trying to write. I was just asking it questions and giving, I wasn't writing down word for word what they, you know, what ChatGPT came back with. I was just using the ideas that it came back with and then doing my own thing. So I think it's virtually impossible if ChatGPT offers suggestions for world hunger, for instance, and it goes into a whole bunch of things, and kids just get ideas from that and write it out themselves. I don't think there's any way that they can detect it unless you have 100 kids using ChatGPT for world hunger and applying to the same school.
Well, I'm not quite sure if even that would give it away, because there might be a degree of randomness built into it. Most likely there is. Although I did discover that at least, unless they've changed it since I played with it, if you ask it to tell you a joke, and it's the beginning of the session, it'll end up giving you the same damn bad joke. So there are some things that it doesn't quite randomize, or at least it didn't when I played with it. If they put in that amount of effort, they very possibly will get away with it. It's like the people who take Wikipedia as their source material, but they change the words and the order. Then it makes it much more difficult to discern that that's what's going on. But the trouble is that there's a lot of lazy people out there, and they'll simply spit out the text. They'll cut it and paste it, and maybe they'll change a word or two. You know, I've seen cases of severe plagiarism where people cut and paste from articles on the web, and other people just do Google searches and find exactly where they plagiarized. There's a lot of lazy plagiarists out there. So if you are correct and the students did what you suggested, I think they'll get away with it. If they do what I think they did, which is cut and paste, eventually, a lot of them are going to be found out, unfortunately, for them and their poor parents who are paying the bills.
Now, Roy, could you explain what AI is? I know what it is, but I don't have a real connected sense of what it does. You have some computer code that is designed to give you longitude and latitude coordinates. How does AI fit into that? You learn from the answer of the coordinates and then you tweak the program? I don't really actually know how it's done.
AC2GS, by the way. I'm not quite sure what you mean by latitude and longitude. It doesn't work on topology. It works on the connections of different types of things. When we're talking about ChatGPT, ChatGPT is specifically designed to provoke a conversational response that simulates a human being but isn't a human being. It's a very sophisticated computer algorithm that is not physically directly trained by even human beings, because the computational requirements, the programmers would die of extreme old age. So what they do is they set up kind of simulations of neural nodes with parameters in each of the interconnects. They expose the program to output, text output of conversations all over the internet. There's trillions and trillions of bytes of people talking back and forth to each other, books, magazine articles, all kinds of things. And they feed it into the system, and the system then starts to adjust a massive number of parameters that are adjustable in the software algorithm, so that the words that they choose line up with the type of words that they're seeing being fed to them. So eventually they know how language works. They don't know anything, but they are able to connect the words in a way that the English language works to convey information. and they base it upon examples that they have been exposed to. Millions and millions and millions of examples have adjusted their parameters in such a way so that they know that if they're using one word, what might be a good word next to it, and next to it, and next to it, to sound like they're not raving lunatics. Internally, they don't have the faintest idea what's going on. There's no consciousness, there's no sense. It's just an algorithm working on a problem.
PhD with an example.
Okay, Jim?
So if we were asked one of these artificial intelligence devices, programs, is ice cream good? It would be able to zip through a million zillion calculations and give answers that other people or systems or opinions have judged as good answers. But in no way would it have that sensation of the coolness of the ice cream on a hot day, or the heart attack that came from eating too much of it, or the family issues that came from it, or the wonderful creamy texture of it that happens, or the social thing of licking an ice cream cone on a 100-degree day and it running down your shirt. None of those things are present. It is not intelligent at all. It's just a mathematical way to give answers that have seemed to be favorable to other people in the past. Oversimplification, of course, but that's how I see it.
Well, yeah, and that's what confuses a lot of people, to the point where that poor schnook at Google, who declared that the Google AI, which is not as interesting as the OpenAI's AI, the ChatGPT, was a sentient living thing and required respect. So they did what any self-respecting business person would do. They fired his crazy ass.
Hear, hear.
The U.S. to
Yes, Paul.
Okay. You know, in your opening remarks, there was, I think, two points where it dropped for a second. You know, I don't know if it had to do with the radio or with a repeater. It just dropped for a split second, and then it started all over again. It went back maybe 5 or 10 seconds and started to say what it said 5 or 10 seconds ago. And when it was doing that, you could tell it was exactly what it was the first time. There was no difference. You know, I mean, if I drop it like, and then I say if I drop it like this, this it's going to sound different. But that version came out, you know, just perfect from what you what was missed. So you could tell from that too. I'm not sure why it dropped, if that was the AI that was doing that or if that was your radio. Back to you, Ryan.
No, that was unfortunately the All-Star link, I think, has its own weird timeout system. So it was timing out on me, and I was kind of stuck. Either I would have a random gap or you would hear the message. And I'd rather you hear the message than the random gap. So you kind of had to sneak behind the curtain. But that wasn't the AI. That wasn't the text synthesis. That was just All-Star's link timing out, apparently, and screwing things up there.
You have to back up a couple of seconds. You're looking on the computers, like a line going across your computer, and you just went back a few seconds. And how did you reset? Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, the program outputs a MP3, and I loaded the MP3 into an MP3 player. I happen to use Audacity. I really like Audacity. It's got a little strangeness here and there, and it just shows me the waveform. So I could see the waveform. I had 10-second pauses during what I thought would be more than enough time for timing out. So when it got to the part where I said I'd drop, he continued to play, 10 seconds of silence. I unkeyed the All-Star and then keyed it back when it was just about to begin with more sound. So that's how I did it this time. I could do it directly off of the website. I had the audio connected through my browser, so if anyone wanted to hear anything else, just by me typing into it, it would be available. But that's how I did it tonight.
That's good to know. Be good, Roy. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Yes, Jim?
It's interesting that, like I said, I couldn't put my finger on what was wrong with that transmission, but I knew something was wrong. And as I'm pondering it and as we're speaking, there's, I generally prefer the written word to take in information. I prefer to read rather than a video or a chat or whatever. And then, you know, verbally is good. But to consume a lot of information, I like the written word. It sounds like what we heard from you was the written word adapted through technology. But there's a whole thing that happens, pauses, as you formulate your next thought. And there's a dynamic that's human, is real, and it's imperfect. And I sense it's somewhat detectable and hard to simulate. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, to a degree it is. And there are different parameters. I could make it much more consistent. I could make it very varied, in which it would probably sound like I was slightly going crazy. So there are parameters that are available on the algorithms. And matter of fact, in a peculiar way, this particular version that they've produced, when I use commas, it generates me kind of hemming or whoring a little bit. So sometimes the timing is not perfect, and that's the problem. Also, again, there is a variableness in the generation, so I could generate the same text twice with the same settings, and it would be ever so slightly different. In this case, it was just I just generated it once and took it into a player. So you didn't kind of hear, you know, take two or take three or such.
Let me see if I have it. I'm reminded that there's paintings that look like photographs and photographs that look like paintings. And while they do fool some of the people some of the time, they don't fool all of the people all of the time. And this situation seems similar. So it's amazing, it's terrifying, it's wow, it's oh my. But I think I see some hope in it that humanity can get past it. It's a squeak, of course, but that's my thought.
Okay, very good. I'm glad you're optimistic. You know, I think humanity will deal with it. We deal with all kinds of nonsense, and we will deal with this one, too. I do believe that the technology will improve, and who knows, maybe a year or two or three from now, you know, if it pays to kind of do this over again with version, you know, 34, this is version 1, I may do it. You never know. I kind of wish we had this sort of stuff for good old Stephen Hawking. You know, Stephen Hawking lost his voice due to a variant of Lou Gehrig's disease, and he used a voice synthesizer that gave him an American accent rather than his British one. No, well,
that's interesting thought. Very interesting. Maybe he wouldn't have made so many shortcuts.
Well, I don't know if it would have affected his work. I optimistically assume it wouldn't have affected his work. It might make it a little bit easier for people to interact with him. I'm sure you saw footage. Almost everyone has seen footage of him kind of curled up in that poor wheelchair of his and kind of flicking, I think, some part of his body to just run the encoder so that he could say his whatever he was going to say. Matter of fact, there's even an episode of Star Trek, the Next Generation, that had Stephen Hawking and Albert Einstein and Isaac Newton on the holodeck, and it was the actual Stephen Hawking playing his own character on it.
That series has definitely explored some interesting concepts.
Yes, indeed. I have enjoyed past Star Treks. I won't bother people to critique the modern age of Star Trek. It is a shadow of its former creature, but yeah. Well, you know, all science fiction is good. Lately, I've kind of enjoyed watching Apple TV's Foundation that was kind of based on Isaac Asimov's Foundation. Isaac Asimov's Foundation was one of the books I really loved, the series of books I loved. This television show has nothing to do, really, with Isaac Asimov's books. They go 180 degrees in the other direction, but it's entertaining for a trifling sci-fi television show. So if anyone out there has access to Apple TV, you might want to check it out. It's pretty.
KD2VHD, I'll stand down for now. What an interesting conversation. Others, please interject.
Okay, that's weird. I got thrown off of a node. Anyway, I was mentioning that the last two Sundays of this month, I won't be available because of the Jewish holidays. So I'm sure Paul will be around. Paul will give you a SpaceNet report. And if anyone else wants to kind of hang out and have your own free-form technical net, I'm sure you're free to. But I just want to let people know. I'll remind them again next Sunday. Anyway, I guess it's time for the usual questions and topics tonight. I would prefer the first few to be amateur radio related, as my synthetic voice said earlier, but we'll take any topic of science and technology. Just hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2VHD, Jim, with a very simple question.
Enter exam after everybody.
Okay, Jim and Westreich. Say again?
Alpha Delta 2 Delta Uniform, Alex.
Okay, Alex recognized your number. Well, your number 2 and Wes is number 3 because he's going to be doing science stuff. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Please, hit that push to talk. Okay, hopefully there'll be others as time progresses. Jim, what do you have to say tonight?
So this might seem quite rudimentary, you know, from the cranium splitting stuff we've been throwing around. But today I had the opportunity, if that's what it was, to have to put a PL259 connector on a RG58 cable on a boat. Cable from a brand new antenna with a brand new connector, all Shakespeare, very expensive stuff. A stupid antenna, it was over $100 for a UHF marine antenna. It seems very similar to a 2-meter setup, just, you know, supposedly made less corrosion prone. And it sucked. Just as much as I remember when I was involved in hobby radio in the late 80s, early 90s, no, late 70s, early 80s. And as I exited that, as I recall, it was with frustration with the impossibility of making a connection at a PL259 that I was confident with, and I hadn't melted the center conductors, dielectric, and melted. It was just terrible. And it's no better now. And can anybody add some hope to either new hardware or better techniques, or, you know, this idea of soldering the braid is just ridiculous. It's not a pouring through the connector, or not adhering to the connector, or not adhering. Am I doing something wrong? Am I missing something? Or do we have a problem here, Houston? Open the net.
Okay, Jim, I'll leave it open for the rest of the guys listening. I'm sure they'll have some great advice. Theoretically, there's nothing wrong with soldering connectors, but if you lack the expertise or the interest in learning the skill set, there's nothing wrong with using compression connectors. Commercial companies use compression crimping tools all the time. Businesses don't futz around for the most part with solder anymore. They have more sophisticated, slightly more expensive connectors possibly, and they crimp them all. So, you know, don't be ashamed of yourself if your connectors are crimped rather than soldered. But I'm open to the rest of the guys out there. I'm sure those are fighting words for some people.
PDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, I have found, I thoroughly agree. It's kind of a rite of passage, and after 40 plus years, I still haven't got it right. What I found helped me a bit, I have an old Weller soldering gun, 8250 AK model. It's a 250-watt gun. What I had done with it is the solder tip actually broke, and I have the two bare wires, the two bare leads coming off the connectors, coming off the terminals of the soldering gun. I have found that in some cases, I actually run that very low voltage, high current, right through the device I'm soldering, like the frame of the of that connector body. I actually run that current right through it, so it actually heats the element up, heats the device up, and I have found that it makes it a little bit easier to solder through the holes. In some cases also, I have drilled extra holes in the end body of the connector so I can hit the braid better in some of the spots. But it has. You're right. It's been it's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I mean that's good advice. If you happen to have that an esoteric a broken high power hand solder, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. I'm sure if you do the wrong thing with that setup, you could really foul up the coax and, you know, melt everything together with itself. The other gentleman, I didn't quite catch your call sign. You wanted to say something?
AF2P. You copy, Roy?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What I have found helpful, flux. Before I solder it, I will sand the BL-259. And then I'll put the flux, and then I go for the soldering. And absolutely hot. You want big heat. You want to, you're not going to do it with a little soldering iron. You need a big one. That's what I have to say.
Say again.
Say again?
I'm out of Hampton, WP2 Alpha Hotel.
Yes, what you'd like to say.
All right, hi, Chuck, WP2HK. I'm having frustrations myself. Been ham for 62 years, and I always was good at soldering the coaxial cables for years and years and years. And either I'm getting too old for it, or something's happening. I really think that they have changed the composition of the holes. The whole kit and caboodle. Some of the coaxial connectors are not like they were years ago. Just the bodies of them are plated. They use less than optimum materials, and they plate something on it. That makes it hard to solder. Between the pin, the outer pin, and the body. Used to be really strong material. You can get that super hot. and it would never melt. Now just about half of them will melt before you finish the job. Some of the coaxial cables, they're made out of aluminum in the center and a little bit of copper coating on the outside of the center conductors. Let me let it drop for a second. And some of them don't even have any, some of the center conductors are hollow. They look just like a PL-259, the connectors anyway, but they're not like they were made years ago. They're junk. A lot of them that you buy, you know, on eBay or whatever, are junk. And the cables, you have to buy the cables from a good manufacturer, but the manufacturers are figuring out a way to make a buck, and they're making the materials, you know, of a lesser quality somehow. And then you got the copper, and then you got the aluminum mixed. You know, they put a little bit of copper outer braid over aluminum. It's difficult. It's not you, sir. I'm telling you, they have changed the build and the composition of the materials. And it's making it awfully hard, and that's why so many people are going to crimping, because you just can't buy a good, unless you pay a lot of money, you can still get Inveno connectors. If you want to pay a lot of money, but the materials they use are not the same, and that will make you go crazy.
Well, thank you, Chet. I agree with you. I was going to mention that a lot of these things are nickel-plated, which is a pain in the backside to solder. The more expensive ones are silver-plated, which are much better and easier to deal with soldering. And I'm sure the alloy that they're using to make the body of these connectors is getting cheaper and cheaper. You know, just look at your penny. Your penny used to be copper. Now it's zinc. So I'm not exactly sure what the alloy is. I'm sure there are different alloys. You know, American manufactured connectors are still somewhat better quality than the less expensive Chinese or Asian variety. They're doing better than they used to. There was a time that they occasionally got the thread number wrong and you couldn't screw the damn things into each other, which was loads of fun. But yeah, it's become more problematic, more difficult. You need to finesse it more, and if you don't have a lot of experience and a very big, heavy, high-power soldering gun, which, again, you could screw things up a lot worse with that high-power soldering gun, but if you learn how to do things, it makes soldering connectors significantly easier. But, you know, my suggestion is get yourself a good crimping tool and you know, go to the other side of the force.
VHD, very interesting direction we're going here. I've been a very good solderer. I've done everything from soldering up to like inch and a half pipes, and people see my work and ask if I'm a steam fitter. And I've done, you know, probing of hybrid technology under a microscope at the wire bond level, and making, you know, impromptu repairs of that stuff. I can solder. This crap is unsolderable. So the crimping is interesting, but I'm befuddled.
Okay, I'm sorry that you're befuddled. I understand. The things that you know how to solder, you solder well, which is good. You've had experience, and you have the right tools. And as we mentioned, the connectors are not what they once were, and you have to really be able to finesse it. It's a relatively, unfortunately, complex situation, because if you don't apply, it's easy not to apply enough heat. So the solder doesn't wet everything, and you don't have a good contact. It's easy to over-solder and melt the insulator and ruin the entire thing. And, you know, connectors? Are these big heat sinks themselves? And it's difficult to kind of control the amount of heat that you're getting to the solder joint. So although it's in the category of soldering, it has its own special ring in hell, unfortunately.
It sure seems like it. I've actually been foregoing connectors entirely as I'm working on building some dipole stuff and just going solder from coax to radiant elements and just doing away with the connector entirely. Causes so much trouble. But yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. Well, thank you for exploring that.
Well, you're welcome, Jim. I wish you good luck. Depending upon how much you like to do it yourself and how much you like to have it kind of sort of done by your equipment, you know, there are tools that will cut a coax to a perfect size for a given connector. You slide the connector into position, and you place the crimping tool over the connector, and you squeeze with all your might. And when you hear that click, the latch releases, and you got yourself a decent connector insertion. Sometimes they will also crimp the center conductor. Sometimes that gets left to the individual to dab a little solder down its hollow hole. But I would suggest connectors are important. You really do need connectors for the most part. So I would suggest you look into the realm of crimping. Look at a couple of YouTubes, you know, see if it is something that you think might suit you.
Say one more time.
Sure, Chad.
Only reason why I'm angry at the connectors myself is because I had some rewiring project. I needed a whole bunch of cables, and I had a whole bunch of coaxial cables from various sources in a giant box, and I wasted hours and hours and hours. I even bought one of those cutters you're talking about, and here's the problem, because with the cables with the copper and the aluminum underneath it, so you use the cutters, and yes, it will cut where you want the cut to be, but then the manufacturers in some cases made the copper section of it, above, which is above the aluminum section, so thin that the copper falls off. Well, you see, you can hardly handle it. You can't even put heat on it because the copper outer conductor of it just falls off in your fingertips. It's so thin. So it's very frustrating. So what I did was, in the last month or so, month and a half, I just bought a whole bunch of pre-made ones from a company that sells them, and they were crimped. And I was a happy camper after that, even though I spent a lot extra money. My time is too valuable, and I just can't put up with trying to spend an hour, spending an hour of my time trying to solder one PL-59. What a frustrating experience. And I've done these, over the years. I must have soldered in the old days hundreds of them perfectly, because that was the good old days with the Amfino connectors and it's beautiful dielectric and all that. And they made good coax, but I don't know. They're selling an awful lot of bad stuff, and it's enough to pull your hair out, and I don't want to lose any more. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, Chad. I mean, it's important, at least for me, that I buy good quality. I'm never going to buy a no-name brand. I'm not going to buy a Chinese brand because I still don't trust them. Pretty much everything in my shack is LMR 400, LMR 240, times microwave. As far as I'm aware, makes a very good product. You were mentioning penny pinching. LMRs are actually designed as, I believe, copper-clad aluminum, the center wire, and the stranded version for the flex. But still, knock on wood, they seem to work for me. If you buy kind of no-name, or God forbid, in the bad old days Radio Shack, you were playing Russian roulette. I knew guys who cut open their Radio Shack coax, and you know, 5 feet of coax, you couldn't find enough copper to melt to make a penny. They were really saving their pennies with some of the stock that they bought in the old days. So, you know, coaxes can be good, bad, or someplace in the middle. You just have to find a trustworthy manufacturer and pay the extra money, unfortunately. Because if you want to pay the least amount of money, chances are you're going to get the least quality.
KD2VHD, seeing if I have it. It's such an interesting problem that really is at the heart of our hobby. I hate that word, but okay, our hobby. That we have this quandary. You know, some of us that are at the end of the trail have more money than time, but with most of our lives we had more time than money. And in either case here, the solution eludes us to have a good way to do this thing that is imperative to this game we play. I think a better solution is warranted. Back to that.
Okay, Jim, I don't exactly know what kind of a solution you have in mind. Transmission line theory, as far as I'm aware, has nothing new and shiny to offer us quite at this point. I've mentioned in the past that coaxial cables were a known entity, I think, going back into the 20s, but they were very expensive, and we hams, didn't want to spend a lot of money, and open wire did most of the job. In some counts, open wire has some features that coax doesn't, that makes it a good choice. It was only after World War II produced an army surplus glut of coax cables from the war effort that amateur radio operators, who always could see a good thing and a sale, bought up all of the army surplus, and the rest is our history here. So, you know, there's still a place for coax and connectors, again, for those old-time pros who can solder connectors blindfolded, God bless you. And for the rest of us poor schnooks, unless you want to pay a professional to do it for a little bit extra money, you buy yourself a good crimping tool and you try your best.
Interesting. Is there anybody on the air tonight who is one of those old-time guys that can make these things work in today's products? Please say so, and I'll recline, or whatever the right word is.
KD2YWQ?
Yes, IWQ.
Correction, Yankee Whiskey, Quebec. Yeah, I still do all my old stuff. I'm just back into the hobby after a minor 40-year absence. And, unfortunately, I don't use Amphenol connectors, but I do hit the shield side before I solder it with a little Dremel to open it up, from the chroming. And I have an old gun, not an iron. I have an old Radio Shack. I think it's about 100-watt gun, and it does the job very well.
Okay, good.
What do you do with the Dremel?
Where the shield gets soldered, the holes that come through, I have a little Dremel grinding bit, and I grind that down so it breaks the surface tension of the chrome. And you'll see some of them when you grind it down. Some of the better ones are still made from brass. And you get a good contact with the flux, with the solder. And then if you're using an adapter for the 58 or the 240 or any of the smaller stuff, as you tighten it, you have a compression fitting.
All right, so that's interesting, because that goes to plumbing soldering techniques that I'm aware of. Yeah, good point. And then what are you using for flux and or solder? Any particular successful products?
I'm not using anything special. I don't remember what the gauge of the So I just bought a new roll of it. I had some with the gun that I've been using. I bought a roll of it, but I don't think that that's too crucial. It's all about getting the temperature of the PL259 hot enough so that it draws the solder in.
Agreed. I have quite enough...